Hey everyone, Brandon Odo back with the podcast. We have a special episode for you today, which is a compilation. I was able to attend SCCM Congress this year, which was in sort of gloomy-looking Orlando. Great conference. I was able to go to SCCM the past couple years. Brian made it 1 year, not this year, though. He had some other engagements. But good event, and I was able to, on behalf of the ICU Liberation Committee, which I sit on, to record some audio and video footage. I grabbed different members from the committee and basically did quick mini interviews. Most of them I just asked one or two questions to get their take on some liberation topics. I did something similar last year, you might recall, which was purely audio. This time I did capture some video. Obviously, you're not going to see that here. This is just going to be the audio from it. But if you want to see the video, I have been releasing short clips on the social media platforms like Instagram or Twitter or whatever it is that you're on. So you can go check them out there. But otherwise, I'll just let you roll into this. Just a bunch of different takes by a bunch of real experts, people at the forefront of the liberation program, things like the A through F bundle. And I think you'll get some interesting perspectives. I'll check back with you at the end.
Hello, I'm Heidi Engel. I'm a physical therapist at UCF Sun Medical Center in San Francisco. I work primarily in the medical ICU. So what is the challenge of first mobilization session with a patient? Very often it's dependent on how much sedation that patient has received before I'm first getting them up. So if they've been lying in bed for anything more than a day or two and I'm getting them up for the very first time, chances are they lack motor planning, they lack orthostatic tolerance, they have fully adapted to a gravity-eliminated position in the world, and they're feeling very frightened, very scared. They've had hallucinations. The family doesn't understand what is going on, and I need to drill down into educating the family, helping them ally me into the process of mobilizing this patient and letting them know it's the best thing for them, and then getting the person upright and keeping them there safely. If ideally I can help this person stand up, I try to do that. The longer this patient has been in under a sedated state, the harder and harder it is on the first session for me to get the patient up out of bed and understanding what needs to happen and getting them back to the real world and away from the world of their hallucinations. I can't tell you how many of my sedated for more than a day or two patients are clearly very engaged with the hallucinating thing they see in the room that we are not aware of. So day one can be really challenging, but the longer it is between when this patient is admitted and when day one happens, the harder and harder and harder my job becomes.
Hello, I'm Sergio Zanotti. I'm with Sound Critical Care. I'm an intensivist in Houston and also a member of the ICU Liberation Committee of SCCM. So I've been a patient actually my whole life as a kid born with congenital heart disease, and I had a major procedure 4 weeks ago. A long time of anesthesia in the ICU for a couple of days. And yes, I mean, it was very humbling and it really changed my perspective of what it means to be liberated from critical illness or for being in the ICU. I think that often clinicians, whether it be physicians, respiratory therapists, nurses, are very focused on the medical aspects of a procedure or parameters, and what they think patients really care about at that moment might not be the same thing. I had a procedure that went very well, yet I was miserable. I couldn't move. I was in pain. And that's really what I wanted help with. And I realized that after any critical illness for a patient, getting a Foley catheter out, getting out of bed, being able to take a couple of steps for the first time are major, major kind of milestones that are really in your mind all the time. And that might not be seen as a major milestone from the perspective of the healthcare team. That's maybe looking at extubation or bigger milestones. So maybe sometimes aligning that, I think, is an opportunity for us as caregivers. I think that what they're getting wrong is validating the patient experience in terms that in that moment, the little things that hurt or the little things that bother you take an enormous amount of your energy. And you could have had a great procedure, but you can yet feel very, very bad and very in a lot of pain or very tired. You could be getting better, but you still feel like the worst day of your life. and being able to encourage our patients, yet at the same time validate their experience, I think would be very important. So I've been a pediatric patient for a long time, and then as an adult, I've been in pediatric hospitals. This is the first time that I actually was in a unit that's designed for adults with congenital heart disease. And I do think that there is perhaps more caring in the pediatric side. And when adult patients are critically ill, they're very vulnerable. And I think that you do want to be cared for as well. And that is something maybe that we can take from the pediatrics.
Hi, I'm Christina Betters. I'm a pediatric intensivist at Monroe Carroll Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt.
Hi, I'm Stacey Williams. I'm a nurse practitioner in the cardiac ICU in pediatrics at Monroe Carroll Jr. at Vanderbilt.
Hi, I'm Jessica Anderson, and I'm one of the pediatric ICU clinical pharmacists at Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt.
So when we think about ICU liberation, there are some considerations that are quite different in children. The only place where we really differ in the bundle is that we do not do spontaneous awakening trials. So the SATs, that's not recommended per the PANDEM guidelines, because in a few studies, we saw worse complications and device dislodgement in pediatrics. So we follow goal-directed sedation protocols, and we do not do SATs.
Another area that we differ is in early mobility. There are times where our patients are not old enough to walk, so we actually have to have different age groups for different areas of mobility. And early mobility can even count as moving a patient to a mother's arms, whereas our older patients can actually have the goal of walking.
And since I'm the pharmacist of the group, naturally, I have to focus on medications, and the bundle element that I love to focus on most is C for choice of sedation and analgesia. One of the biggest differences between peds and adults is our inability to use propofol for long-term continuous infusions just due to risk of PRIS in our pediatric population. But there is more and more evidence coming out supporting the use of Prasdex over benzodiazepines, which is super, super exciting, because that's something that we've taken from the adult side and have been able to study. So that's a big difference between peds and adults is the lack of the use of propofol. But we are able to use alpha-2 agonists.
Hi, I'm Jenna Doman. I'm a pediatric physical therapist here at SCCM. I was asked the question, what are some common barriers and challenges to early mobility in the pediatric ICU patient? I think everybody kind of first thinks about the 2-year-old that doesn't listen, or like the 3-year-old that you just can't bargain with to not pull out their ET tube like you can an adult. That is certainly like the challenge that comes to my mind first, but I think you also have this unique opportunity that children don't know what they don't know. So if this is the routine, they go with the routine. And most children haven't been in an ICU before, so they can't say, last time I was here, you didn't make me do this. Why do I have to do this today? You just say, hey, I want to play. Let's play. And that's definitely a thing that helps in pediatric critical care that you don't always see in adults. You also have the parents who can say, we can tell, and we can say, this is why we're doing this. This is why we, you know, walk this path, and this is normal here. And that helps so much in mobilizing the pediatric ICU patient.
I'm Kaylee Dayton, I'm a nurse practitioner, and I train ICU teams to become awake and walking ICUs. And the question was, what would I say to people that think it's more humane to keep patients sedated while on mechanical ventilation? I would invite them to listen to those that have lived it. Talk to survivors, ask them if they were sleeping. Scientifically, we know that they're not sleeping. They cannot go into REM cycle 3 and 4, which is one of the main mechanisms by which sedation causes delirium. But I want you to hear from survivors talk about what they actually experienced during these days and weeks of sleeplessness when they thought that their deceased father was cannibalizing them. They were sexually assaulted. They were kidnapped. There is so much more terror that we can subject them to via sedation and delirium than the reality of the ICU. Although it's unpleasant to be intubated, every survivor I've talked to that had delirium under sedation would much rather be awake. The goal of the ABCDF bundle is to keep patients as awake, communicative, autonomous, and mobile as possible. And that is the key to allowing patients to survive and thrive with the best chance possible.
So I've been asked my favorite sedative. If I had to pick one, I would say anything not a benzo is a starter. But if I had to go for something else, the new PADIS guideline update came out today. Some good evidence to support dexmedetomidine for our mechanically ventilated patients, especially those who can handle a light sedation target if you're working toward delirium prevention. So probably have to go with that one. And it's also good for those rowdy patients that are having a hard time with their SATs, SBTs. Otherwise, you can potentially transition them over and work off some of the heavier benzos. Best trick for avoiding a sedative, backing it up to your order sets and working on your culture so that it's not a sedation first culture. We really should be trying our PRNs first and working toward sedation goals that don't have our patients completely sedated. It's a culture change.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Brian Peach from the University of Central Florida. I am a post-intensive care syndrome researcher. Post-intensive care syndrome is a new or worsening physical, mental health, and cognitive health issue that impacts critical illness survivors. The focus of my research is post-traumatic stress disorder in survivors of critical illness. What we know is that many of these survivors have terrible issues with traumatic memories from their time in the ICU. They may not remember specifically what happened, but they remember the vivid dreams they have under the effects of sedation. Many of these memories live with them and impact their day-to-day lives, impact their ability to work, impact relationships. So with the ICU Liberation Bundle, our goal is to prevent or limit delirium, which is oftentimes a precursor to post-intensive care syndrome. I think the biggest thing is that we really need to get away from heavily sedating our patients. We know that sedation is strongly linked to delirium, and if we can either not use sedation or use limited amounts, and I think there are many cases when we could do that, we could help to prevent delirium, which in turn would help with PICs.
All right, guys, there you have it. Hopefully that was interesting. What I personally found interesting was I loved the pediatric perspective. I know so little about pediatric critical care that, you know, it's almost like veterinary medicine. It's just such a different perspective. And seeing how things differ, such as, you know, I didn't realize that they really, for the most part, don't use propofol because they think there's a higher risk of propofol infusion syndrome. But if you really get down to it, you know, the differences in implementation of things like mobility obviously depends on the patient's age. You know, as you cross the spectrum of ages, it's almost like you're dealing with whole different types of creatures. And hey, does anyone who's done anything with trying to implement and operationalize liberation kinds of measures, it's all about the tactics and the practical issues. There's no question about the high level strategic goals. That's all straightforward. The challenge is always how do you do it? And I think what you'll hear again and again and again, if you talk to anybody about these issues or if you've worked with it in any way, sedation. Yes, mobilize patients. Yes, screen for things like mobility and so on and so forth. But sedation is where it all begins and sometimes where it ends, because you can't do any of those things if your patients are either over-sedated or delirious, which is usually the product of over-sedation. And once you've gotten there, it's hard to get out of it. And it's just, that is so often the bottleneck. You could have all these lofty ideas about things like waking patients up and so on and so forth. But if they are already gorked out from the get-go after you intubated them, for instance, it's all just impossible. So, you know, I really think everything else is kind of secondary to that. And if you're having a hard time implementing these measures in your ICU, start there. That is most likely the primary problem. After that, it's like whipped cream and a cherry on top. Guys, it was great to see and hear from any of you at the conference who said hi. Hope to see you next year if I'm able to attend. Otherwise, I'll get you back to your regular content. See you in a couple weeks.